If you're a busy woman raising children and you want to learn to reverse engineer how you want to feel in all areas of your life, listen up. For the first time ever, I am teaching my energetic time management process. Not only am I teaching it live, but you're getting one-on-one access to me. Yes, you heard that correctly. You can reach out to me personally and get feedback on how this process is working in your life. So head on over to Heather Chauvin, chauvin.com/workshop. As soon as you register, you are going to get a pre-recorded training video that you can watch over and over and over again that also has an accompanied PDF, step by step. I'm literally showing you step by step. You're also going to be given the details to reach out to me one-on-one and my team so we can support you as you're integrating this work in your busy schedule. And we're also going to be throwing in 2 live group Q&A calls. So come ask your questions. I'm going to show you how to integrate energetic time management, not just at home, but in your work as well. Ask all your questions and I'm there to help you live in alignment with how you want to feel. Head on over to heatherchauvin.com/workshop and join us live today in May.
Do you ever wonder what is truly getting in your way from creating the life that you really, really want? I'm really excited to share today's episode with you. I have a guest on the show. Her name is Andrea Owen. I think she's been on the podcast before a while back. Her and I have been friends, colleagues for a few years now. Andrea is an author, a mentor, a certified life coach who helps high-achieving women let go of perfectionism, control, and isolation, and helping them choose courage and confidence instead. She has helped thousands of women manage their inner critic to create loving connections and live their most kick-ass life. She is the author of How to Stop Feeling Like Shit, which came out last year, and 52 Ways of Living Your Kick-Ass Life. You can check her out at yourkickasslife.com. She also has a podcast called Your Kickass Life. So we get into some heavy topics today. Andrea opens up about her drinking. I believe she's been sober for 7-ish years now, a long time. But we get on the topic of gray drinking. This is a touchy subject for me. I get extremely triggered by this culture of motherhood and how, wine time and mommy juice and, I believe it's a silent epidemic that needs to be talked about. So we talk about gray drinking. We talk about Andrea, grief, loss, losing her father, but also just the inner work that she had to do to continue on her journey and her book selling and all of these great things. So I'm really excited to share today's interview with you. And I would love to hear your feedback. Did you have any aha moments? Did this shake anything up inside of you? Let us know. Send your thoughts to support@heatherchauvin.com or find me on Instagram at @momisincontrol and send them over there. Super, super excited to share Andrea's wisdom with you. And just know, you are not alone. Here we go.
Yes, it's magic that way. All right, Miss Andrea, I'm excited to have you back on the show. Welcome.
I'm excited to be here. I always love a good excuse to get to talk to you, Heather, so...
It's like
my pleasure.
Yeah. It's like when we chat, we have to hit record. Like you just, right. It's an excuse when you, I don't like the word busy, but when you're a woman with a full plate, it's all about, we're good at multitasking.
Yes. Yes. A woman with a full plate. I like that in lieu of saying that we're busy or overwhelmed.
Yes. We should just like jump right in there because there's a lot of trigger words and busy is one of those for me. Mm-hmm. Cause I'm like, do you believe busy? I think we talked about this. I was on your podcast and you said something about overwhelm being a choice or you were asking mm-hmm. me about that. What's your perspective on busy?
I go back and forth because I do think that there's a cultural element to it. I think that as women still, we tend to be, if we have chosen to be mothers, we tend to be the primary caregiver mm-hmm. of our families. And I know that there are exceptions in many families, but generally speaking, we tend to be the primary caregiver. There's a lot of single motherhood out there. And I just think that, I mean, without climbing up on my feminist soapbox from the get-go, I think that sometimes we have to work harder to get a little bit less. And for women of color, it's even more so. But I think that as far as overwhelm being a choice, I do think that we choose to take on as much as we're taking on. And I also think that culturally, we're expected to take on more than our share. And the last thing I want to mention about that, I think that I just want to make the distinction between emotional overwhelm and sort of like logistical overwhelm, because emotional overwhelm, I don't so much think that that's a choice. I think that emotions and how you deal with them, which is probably another conversation, but I don't think that we're so much at choice with emotional overwhelm.
I love that you just said it. It's one thing to take everything off your to-do list, but people are like, why am I still tired? I'm like, because you gotta take your shit off the plate. Inside
stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
Inside. And that's where the deeper work happens.
Oh, and I feel like that's even harder because I'm not one that poo-poos at delegating. Like, oh my gosh, where do I hire someone to do this? Mm-hmm. Where can I hand this over to someone? And are you even like remotely qualified to do it? Then go ahead, you can do it. I know that there's a lot of people who really struggle with that. I don't. But it's turning off that mind chatter. And I know that anxiety can play a role in that. Yeah, I just, that's a whole nother can of worms.
I love this conversation though, because I tell people, I talk a lot about energy leaks. That's what I call them. Yeah. And you can delegate till the cows come home. Is that like a good thing?
Yeah.
Is that still saying? But you have to, yeah, it's like there's still a lot going on the inside. And I think that's the conversation we need to be having about self-care and really, you know, everyone's like freedom and space. It's like, yeah, but you can have like a day to yourself. You can have time in your calendar, but yet you still don't feel spacious. You still don't feel free. So before we hit record on this conversation, I said, what do you want to talk about? And I just love talking to you, but let's dive into, do we want to talk about drinking first or we want to talk about self-care?
Well, I think that the drinking will automatically morph into a self-care conversation. I think either one, it's sort of a chicken or egg. So
let's talk about drinking.
Okay. Right? Yeah. Let's talk about drinking.
Drinking. And for the women that are listening, some might have already identified that this is an issue for them and some may not. So let's just make them uncomfortable right off the get-go.
Well, I love that you said that because I think that let me sort of qualify the people who it might not be a problem at all. So if you are someone who never really thinks about drinking, you don't, you know, you, if you went to a wedding and found out it was a dry wedding, you wouldn't even bat an eyelash. You wouldn't be disappointed. If you don't typically have booze in your house, then this probably, maybe you can just like fast forward through this conversation. I invite you not to, because I'm sure that you know someone who is struggling a little bit. And I think where I want to start is typically in the past, this conversation has been black or white. You know, it's either you have a decent problem with alcohol and it's gotten to the point where it needs to quote unquote be a conversation, or you don't at all. And that's shifting. And I think it's needed to have shifted for a long time. Just nobody said it, because I got sober in 2011 and I have what is called a high bottom. So meaning I never had a DUI. I never lost any relationships because of my drinking. My marriage was still very much intact. My husband, you know, would raise an eyebrow a little bit about the amount I was drinking, and it just was progressively and very quickly getting worse and worse. But again, like, I didn't go to jail. I didn't lose my job. I didn't even, you know, take my top off at a party and get just hammered and humiliate myself. None of that. And that's what's also called in our world a functional alcoholic. But I even think like one step back from that. Now the conversation is what's being called gray area drinking. So it's people who don't identify as a quote unquote alcoholic, and they maybe don't even have those obsessive thoughts about alcohol like I did, but they know that alcohol is not good for them. They know that sometimes when they have one glass of wine, it turns into three, and it's not a 4-ounce glass of wine. And they also kind of are seeing it progress, even if it's very slowly, into a place that they're not comfortable with.
What's your perspective on drinking and motherhood and the culture of this? Because, yeah.
I'm curious what your perspective is on it first, because I'm sure people know what I'm going to say about it.
What do you think? Well, okay, this is interesting because I've never identified as someone who enjoys alcohol ever. I even remember being in my teens and the outsider. It is painful for me. It hurts my body. I have one glass of wine, more from a mental health perspective. It almost spooked me because I would have one glass of wine. I tell people if I drank a glass of wine a night for a month, I would probably have to admit myself into the psych ward. And I'm not saying that to be like dramatic. I'm serious about it. It takes me down a rabbit hole very quickly. So I just made a choice actually a year and a half ago to just stop drinking. And it's been interesting to watch, because the only time I was drinking was when it was for social, right? Mm-hmm. Because I felt pressured. It's very interesting to watch people when I'm like, no, thank you. And their shit comes up. So this is where I get drastically triggered when I walk into a bookstore and I see a whole shelf that, you know, of wine glasses that literally say mommy juice or me time. I can't even tolerate having this conversation. Like, I get so triggered. I'm like, this is an epidemic. And I think people don't understand the balance of like, where does this end, where I'm giving myself that space and time versus now I'm codependent on alcohol to get me through my role as a mother.
Mm-hmm. Well, the bottom line of it, I'm going to say it right from the top, is we don't need drinking in motherhood. Like, we can do motherhood just fine without it. But of course, it's a $60 billion industry or something like that? Maybe that I'm getting that confused with the diet industry. Whatever the statistic is, there's some people at the top. I'm going to say it. It's a lot of men that are making a lot of money from women and drinking. And when you're talking specifically about motherhood, it's become a culture, and really there are people on both ends of the spectrum. I think there are people who are vehement about not, you know, it's like, don't take my wine away. It's you know, it's almost as if we're talking about gun control. Like, that's how controversial it is. Like, mm-hmm. Take away my guns. Moms are like, don't take away my wine. Right. And oh my gosh, I mean, where do I even begin? I think that there are some people who feel very strongly that this is a feminist issue, and that that keeping women drunk really is a tool of keeping them quiet and keeping them small and keeping them not in control and not in charge. And I don't entirely disagree with that, but for the sake of this conversation, I do think that we have encouraged, just generally speaking, we have encouraged drinking to the point where we have normalized it so much, to the point where for many people, many women, it's become a problem in their lives. And then it just sort of like runs away from them. And this shame and stigma around having a drinking problem, or God forbid, being an alcoholic, that shame and stigma, I believe, is fierce within motherhood, because good mothers aren't drunks, right? I mean, if you want to have a fierce judgment against someone, you know, when you're watching a movie or something, it's a mother who is a drug addict or a drunk, right? It's just, it's that thing. And so culturally, I don't think that we make that distinction between like whether she's like a heroin addict who's homeless mother versus a mom living in the suburbs who becomes an alcoholic and comes out and says that I'm an alcoholic. That's one of the reasons that I personally came out with my story, because I wanted to put a face on it. Like, yes, it's all of us. It does not discriminate, but I'm kind of going down the path too far. I will run away with this conversation, Heather. So
like, where do you want me to go? Where do you want me to go?
I think that, you know, and I just, where we could go is to speak to anyone who's listening to this who might be questioning their drinking and being scared to even question it. Mm-hmm. That's the tricky part.
What's your perspective on people, I like when the new year came, like dry January, what's your perspective on, hey, if you don't know if it's a problem for you or not, try to stop doing it for 30 days.
Yeah. Well, that was the advice that I got when I knew, and just a quick backstory. So I had, my father got sober when I was 18. And he was really the definition of a high functioning alcoholic. He always had a great job. We lived in a gated community. He drove a Mercedes. Like we were not someone that you would look at and think we were a highly dysfunctional family. And I never even saw my dad drunk ever. I don't think I ever, even when I was a lot younger and they used to party more with their tennis friends, but I saw and understood what it meant to be a quote unquote high functioning alcoholic. And so when I started to notice my own patterns, my children were really small and I had a friend who had 10 years of sobriety and I got up the courage to tell her that I think I might have a problem. And I was so nervous to tell her, and she was a good friend too. I just thought she was going to gasp and it was going to be this big deal. And it was no big deal. And she's like, okay, well, what if you just quit for 30 days? And it's not so much that you're just going to be sober for 30 days, but really pay attention to what happens. So this is more or less a coaching exercise. And she's a coach. This is the hazard we have when our friends are coaches.
Yeah. Be careful who you ask advice from. I'm like, which Heather do you want to show up? You might not like me.
Yep. I ask that to my friends too. But she said, just pay attention to what comes up, you know, your thoughts, your feelings. And I lasted 6 days, Heather, and I was white knuckling it. And I just broke down and was like, no, I deserve this drink. And so that was a pretty clear indicator to me that something was not well within me. And I chose the route of Alcoholics Anonymous because it was what I knew. It was what was modeled for me. And I was already a fan of 12-step programs, having been to Codependence Anonymous and being a love addict myself. So I knew that that I had some emotional things going on that I needed to keep working on, and drinking was really just a symptom. I don't think that that's everyone though. I honestly don't think that everyone is a quote unquote alcoholic. And this is the conversation that's been really interesting over the last few years that I've been seeing, and more books are coming out about it, is that because there's no blood test that tells us if, you know, where on the spectrum we are with our drinking. Do we have a drinking problem? Do we have a, you know, crazy relationship with alcohol? Like what do you label it? And we like to put labels on things, right? Stage one, cancer, you know, type two, diabetes. Like we like things tied up with a pretty bow, but drinking, we don't have that.
So what do you recommend for someone who's listening to this going, oh shit, I think she's talking to me. Like, where do they go? Do you have book recommendations?
Yeah. I think that, well, first and foremost, I just want them to know that there's a gray area and that you might not necessarily be a quote unquote alcoholic, but I also want to tag this onto that. Here's one of the problems I have. And I'm seeing this conversation with gray area drinking. It's sort of like, do you remember when pole dancing was really, really popular just a handful of years ago? And yep. You would see all these, you know, suburban women go into these pole dancing classes. And sometimes they would say things like, yeah, I do pole dancing, but I'm not a stripper. And I read an article from a stripper who was like, hey, knock it off. you're basically shaming us. Like, oh, like I want to do this thing, but I'm not like you. Like you're the other, the strippers over there. They're sex workers. Like sex work is work. So I feel like it's a little bit similar with this conversation with alcohol, is that people are saying, you know, there's all these people getting sober for their health and they're saying, but I'm not an alcoholic. And I'm like, okay. Hi. I think that yes, you very well may not be an alcoholic, but if you are getting sober for your health or whatever reason, don't close the door on that might be the case for you. And then also, please just leave that out of the conversation when you're talking about it publicly. Like if you're having a one-on-one conversation, sure, but please know that you are stigmatizing people who truly have a drinking problem. And then that can create more shame and stigma. And then those people keep drinking. So just something to keep in mind there.
What would Brene Brown call that? Cause that's just like a vulnerability thing, right?
You mean like people coming out and saying that they have a problem, or which part?
Yeah. Like I have a problem, but don't worry. I'm not like the worst of the worst type deal. Yeah. I'm not an alcoholic. It's like, look at me, I'm dry, but don't, you know, you're probably thinking it's that I'm more noble than you. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's sort of like ranking your pain. And trying, I don't know if Brene would call it that. That's what I would call it. Just like ranking your pain. It's like my problem, quote unquote, isn't as bad as yours. Like there's a spectrum, and I just want everybody to know that I am more noble than this person. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's another form of judgment.
It totally is. And I love her to death, and I follow her on Instagram. Melissa Hartwig did it. She's the Whole 30 person. And
mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, I was watching her stories and she did it, and I was so disappointed. And I know she didn't mean any harm, but it's that whole like intention and impact thing. And it's a complicated conversation. And like, of course people aren't going to get it right. Like I'm still learning how to have this conversation, but it's complicated. And I think what I want people to know who are listening, you know, you asked me the question, what should they do? I don't want to skip over that. You look at just Google gray area drinking. There's podcasts out there that specifically talk about this topic. There's books out there that talk about it. And whatever you need to do to just experiment and take a closer look at it, then do that. And please know that there are thousands, tens of thousands of people who are having this conversation. There's tons of people to follow on Instagram who are talking about recovery. And when I say recovery, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, it's really, it's just like recovery from life, because we're all recovering from something.
I was just going to say that. I'm like, we're all fucking recovering from something. We're just trying to, keep it together.
Drinking is the system, just like food, just like relationships, just like whatever it is for people. And so mm-hmm. it's really never about the drinking, just like it's never about the food, et cetera, et cetera. But drinking can be a symptom that can really harm your life, unfortunately.
I think I like how you're talking about this from, we love labels, don't we?
Everyone's we do.
Label something. What stage are you in? It's like, guys, we're all at some point in life. It doesn't, you know, you're a child and then something clicks and happens and all of a sudden you're like, shit, now I just need to unlearn everything. I feel like that's what adulthood is. You're just like unlearning and trying to dig through the shit to like figure out who you are. The more and more I talk to women, like, doesn't matter if it's parenting, it doesn't matter if it's business or health. We're all just being like, who am I? Who was I that person before the world told me not to be?
Yes, absolutely. We were all raised by flawed humans who were doing the best that they can, who were also raised by flawed humans. And I 1,000% agree with you. It is about unlearning all of these things. And we like labels because then we can try and fix it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, my daughter was having chronic stomach issues and we had her poop tested and everything, and we're trying to figure out, like, I wanted a name for what she has. Is it this? No. Okay. Thank goodness. Is it this? Maybe. Okay. So then what kind of supplements do we need to take? Is it diet? You know, like all of these things that we're trying to constantly fix ourselves for good reason, right? We all want to be healthy. We all want to be the best humans possible. And that's why your people are listening to this. And at the same time, the drinking conversation is very complicated.
Yeah. And I'm just grateful that we're having it. Because like you said, it's typically an all or nothing conversation. Mm-hmm. And just know that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. I find, what is your perspective with that? I've noticed, I used to be this person and definitely in recovery from all or nothing personality. I don't know if you want to call it
a
trait. Yeah. It's like, you're either in control or you're not in control. Mm-hmm. And you either go to the gym every day for an hour, or you just don't work out at all. You're either eating healthy or you're not. Yeah. But why can't we just have consistency? I mean, one of the biggest game changers for me in 2018 was I had, a trainer that I was working with a little bit. I'm like, listen, I'm just not even using this gym membership, so I need to get something out of it. So let's do a few sessions. And he looked at me after a few sessions, like, Heather, you need to operate at like 70%. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what do you mean 70%? He's like, yeah, you're like a fucking workhorse. And this is why you burn yourself out all the time. This is why you got sick. This is why, you know, you'll be great for a little bit and then you're not. He's like, you need to just show up every day consistently. I'm like, that's too easy. That's too easy. Why don't we do that?
We went there. I wrote about this in my first book. I had a coach when I was in coach training, and I was the way that, we were trained is that we had these five separate long weekends for the training. They were in person. And one of the weekends was the weekend before I was getting married. And so I was clearly distracted, you know, thinking about all the things that I had to do, just excited. And I pulled one of the coaches aside and I said, I'm really distracted. And I was worried that I was not getting all the information. You know, I wasn't getting as much out of the weekend as I should be getting so I could go on to be this really amazing life coach, right? And she looks at me and she said, what if you just had like a C plus weekend? And I was like, what the fuck?
No. When has any educator ever told you to strive for C plus?
For C plus. No, I need to tell you how I can do extra credit. Like, I need you to tell me like how can I fix this? Fix my brain or give me extra credit, give me extra assignments. But no, she really invited me to just kind of be halfway in.
And be okay with that.
Yes. And know that I wasn't a failure if I did that. And you know what? I'm a damn good coach. And I got a C plus that weekend. And I did go back and volunteer for that weekend. I don't know how much it helped, you know, later on, but it truly, sometimes that can change your life. And that was the name of the chapter in my first book, is like a C plus day can change your life. Because many times, I think for probably a lot of your people listening, who I know there's probably a lot of high achievers out there, your C plus day is the equivalent to most people's A day. Yeah. And no one's going to notice.
No. This morning, I was supposed to be at the gym at 5:30. Mm-hmm. And my dog took my shoe and I had them right by the front door. I'm like, okay, everything's ready. I'm going to go fucking wake up. I'm like, there's one goddamn shoe here. And I looked everywhere. I couldn't find my shoe. So I'm like, fine, I'm going to go with no shoes, right? Just have my boots on. I'm like, I just will work out with no running shoes because I don't have any other running shoes here. So then I go to my car door. It's like frozen shut. I'm like, okay, I get your point. Mm-hmm. Come back in. I'm like, not happening. I'll be in later. And I'm like, Heather, you're not a failure. You are still going to go to the gym. It just didn't happen on your clock.
Yeah.
Shut up. Like, stop. Like, be kind to yourself. And yeah. I think women are we're just our brains. Oh, geez. It's like, calm down. Like, you're not a failure because you didn't go when you said you were going to go. You'll go later after you find the damn shoe and your car isn't frozen.
I have conversations with my husband about how my brain works. And I give him examples. I'm like, it's as if I have like at least 30 browsers open at all times. And I'm constantly spinning about, you know, Colton's about to outgrow his shoes. I need to go on Zappos and order more, just like all of the things. And he just like, he's like bewildered. And I'm like, that's not how your brain works. And he's like, no.
You know, men and women are so different. My husband's like, I will say things out loud and he starts bursting into laughter. He goes, oh, how did that conversation go in your head? I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I just finished the sentence out loud. He's like, how did you get over there? I'm like, well, I thought about this and then I went to the paint color and then that was green. So then I was thinking about trees and then trees. I was like, you know what? We haven't gone for a walk in the forest a lot lately. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. It's hilarious. Well,
some of that too is having conversations about delegating and like who gets this and who gets that. And that's been just round and around and has brought us to couples therapy. like I'm not going to lie. But it's been, and he doesn't notice it's, that's the whole conversation about the invisible labor that happens. Like the, you know, the laundry fairy and the toilet paper fairy. Like I had a meltdown one time. I'm like, have we ever run out of toilet paper ever? And they were like, no. My family's like scared. Like, what do you think always has inventory of our fucking toilet paper? So that happened.
You know what's on the flip side of that?
My husband, I guess you could say I retired him, but he quit his 9-to-5 like over a year ago. And he's been taking over a lot of the domesticated roles. And do you want to know how much I have to work through my shit that I'm not failing as a woman? Because I haven't done laundry in a long time, or I don't make the kids' lunches. Isn't this awful?
It is. It's so interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're actually in the process of hiring what we're going to call a house manager to do.
A house manager. I fucking love that.
a house manager.
It stemmed from, I'm not sure if you read Denise Duffield Thomas's article about, she wrote it in the New Year.
Yeah.
Just about how much help she gets at home. And like, just right off the top, like, I understand I'm at a place now in my life and in my business where I can hire someone to help me. And I'm happy to pay someone a living wage to come. And I mean, it's literally like a handful of hours a week to start. She's mm-hmm. going to do things like walk my dog when I can't. Eventually this person will pick up my kids because it's a long story with the buses around here, but that's like an hour of my afternoon that I'm sitting in the pickup line. And then pretty soon I'm gonna have kids in two different schools. So that's going to take even more time. And just, you know, like the clutter on the counter and emptying the dishwasher and switching out the laundry and not only going to pick up my groceries, but to put them away. Eventually yeah. this person will like prep dinner and things like that. So that's what we're going to hire. And it really also was about me having honest and kind conversations with my husband and saying like, we have got to manage this better because it's not working. Instead of me yelling about toilet paper, because that doesn't help anybody.
Because you know, it's not about the damn toilet paper.
It's not about the toilet paper. It really wasn't. It was about all the other things.
So let's talk about this in a different light, with self-care, working out, all of that fun stuff, that conversation. And I know there's always this... I'm at this point now where I'm just committed to this mission. I'm like, okay, I want to do this. And realizing that as you continue to grow and up level and evolve, other things have to let go, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like the whole Marie Kondo. Does this spark joy? Does this spark joy? Like, okay, you got a new outfit, like get rid of something. Mm-hmm. And women, we have a really hard time doing that with the unconscious stuff, with the, our subconscious stuff, with the like invisible, right? The invisible workload. Cause we don't realize to like stop and say, hey, okay, now that I'm doing this, I have to let go of something. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the self-care. I mean, it's a very trendy term. I feel like people think it's all, most might think it's about pedicures and manicures and making sure you're having coffee dates with your girlfriends, which I think it goes on a deeper level. But I would love for you to share your journey about working out, why you took time off, and, where you're at now.
Yeah. So what happened was I actually have a fitness background. So I went to college and that was my major, exercise physiology. And I graduated and went into the fitness industry. And that kind of changed from working on the gym floor for a while as a personal trainer to working corporately with an amazing organization that certifies personal trainers and group fitness instructors. And so fitness has always been a big part of my life. I grew up in a fit family. My mom never even had any body issues. Like she's a curvy woman, but she never, and I know that a lot of women's experience is that they grew up hearing their mom speak badly about her body or getting on the scale all the time. That wasn't my experience. So just, I was a product of our culture and grew up in the 80s when the aerobics craze was a thing and still always knowing that the goal was to always be thin. And my parents played tennis my entire life. So exercise was never a bad thing. It was always fun and a good thing. So what ended up happening is around 2016, I was, just turned 40 and things were kind of starting to shift and change within my body. And I lost my dad. And then I had came to the realization. I remember I did some race. I can't remember. I think it was a 10K. And I was running the 6 miles and miserable the whole time. In fact, so much so that towards the end of the race, my husband and my kids were there and my son saw me. He said, "There's mom." And my husband said, "That's not mommy." And he said, "I didn't even recognize you because you looked so miserable." Like he didn't recognize my face. And I finished that race and I said, "I think I'm done. Like I'm done. I need to hang up my running shoes for a while." And I hung up all workout for a while. I had in 2014, I was counting macros and I struggled with an eating disorder, but I finally got to that breaking point where I was done viewing exercise as a means to either change my body or maintain the shape of my body. And that was always my top priority. Never was it about health. Like, of course I would say that, but it was really because it was the noble thing to say, but that really was not my top priority.
I stopped drinking, but I'm not an alcoholic.
Exactly.
Andrea, were you doing the exact same thing that you give women shit for?
Yeah, the noble thing to say was, of course, I'm taking care of myself and this is for my health. And it's like, yes, but if my body was not maintaining itself or, you know, like doing the thing that I want it to do, you know, to maintain its shape or be even thinner, then I didn't want it. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, and I don't recommend this to everyone, like, but this is the journey that I had to go on. And so I just quit. I just totally stopped working out. And it was sort of like when my friend said, just quit for 30 days and see what happens. Like I wanted to see what happened. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I didn't feel like my energy just dropped. And it, over the course of a couple of years, I put on, you know, anywhere from 10 to 15 pounds. I don't have a scale, but I've gone up, I went up 2 pant sizes and things were definitely changing. Like my body did not look the same anymore. And of course, you know, as I'm entering middle age and things start to change anyway with muscle loss and things like that. And so what really actually, you're going to laugh at this because I don't think I've told you this. What made me kind of wake up is I went to the doctor to get regular, just to check up, and my cholesterol had gone up. And I truly, like, and here I am, somebody who like believes in science wholeheartedly. And I was like, huh, really? And I'm like, oh, you guys aren't lying about that. Like that exercise like truly lowers your cholesterol. Mm-hmm. And coming from a family with coronary artery disease, my dad had a quadruple bypass at the age of 58 and he was always working out. I'm like, this is probably something I should pay attention to. And so that really made me, really pushed me. I didn't start working out right away, but it pushed me into the inner work of, okay, I need to look at this. I need to look at really doing some work. And so it took me diving into diet culture and just looking at the messages I had been fed my entire life about what it meant to be a woman and what it meant to be a woman that was desirable. And, you know, doing a lot of crying, doing a lot of journaling, doing a lot of shaking my fist at the, you know, at the sky. And what it came down to was this, is that, and I am sure you'll kind of understand this. I think about my children and I think about being a grandmother. It's like, I don't want to be this grandma who can't do anything and who has a hard time getting up out of the seat and just like this basic functional movement. That's what scares me the most. And I kind of feel like whatever works, whatever motivates you to get your ass in gear. And also, I just truly know that everything works better in my life and in my body when I am consistently exercising. I have anxiety, for God's sake. Like, I know that exercise is medicine. So I started again.
Love it.
I'm back.
Mm-hmm. And you can tell that you have a different mindset going into it.
I do have a different mindset. And so I have to watch myself though. It wasn't just like, I got to this place and here I am. Like I still watch myself in that, you know, I got an Apple Watch and I'll tell you what, like closing those rings, man, with somebody with anxiety and obsessive compulsive disorder tendencies, I have to be really careful and be okay if I don't close a ring one day. It's just, it's fine. I need a day off. My body needs a day off. So it's really about listening to my body and knowing that it will probably always be a work in progress. It's like you were saying, you know, I'm unlearning decades of messaging.
Yeah, I find that's why I won't buy an Apple Watch, because I'm like, I will become obsessive. And it's so weird. It's so weird. It's such an inner game. It's all an inner game. And I found for me, it was always putting that pressure on myself, like going from like, oh, I neglected this body to the point where I didn't even realize it had like stage 4 cancer tumors growing into it, where people are like, are you pregnant? I'm like, let me get that checked out. Oh no, it's just a big tumor. Like what the fuck? Like how in denial are you? Go to the opposite extreme, right? Neglect or overdoing it. Yeah. And realizing that I was still working out from a place of fear because I didn't want to die. And then now going, I don't care. Like, I don't care what the scale says. I just want to feel good. I want to feel healthy. I want to feel strong. But again, being mindful of that if I don't work out one day, am I a failure as a human being? No. So there's always this lovely, quote unquote, balance.
Yes.
balance.
Another trigger word.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That is a big trigger word.
Mm-hmm. It's like, find alignment. How do you want to feel? Do your best every day to get closer to that. That's it.
Yeah.
You guys, take the pressure off yourselves.
For sure.
So what are you up to these days? What are you doing?
Well, besides trying to close the rings on my Apple Watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Since that's the main focus of your everyday existence.
That's the main focus. I am, you know, in my own personal development, which I always like to talk about, is I'm thinking about up-leveling and from a place of what does that mean? And it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, making a lot more money, which that's of course always a bonus, but this is actually the first year, 2019, where I have not had a financial goal. And I'm letting myself off the hook and it feels amazing because I felt like I was breaking rule number one as an entrepreneur to not have, I've always had a money goal. And I'm letting it go this year as an experiment and really taking the time to focus on, you know, I'm looking back at some trauma stuff that went on, and it's so funny. Like the universe is just like serving up. Oh my God. Let me tell you a quick story of what happened. I have been working on this trauma stuff and told a particular story. And within the story, there were some anecdotes of some things that had happened to me going all the way back to high school. Mm-hmm. That day, one of the guys who has probably no idea he had participated in some trauma that was, you know, seemingly very, very innocent back then, messaged me on Facebook to ask me for a favor that didn't have anything to do with really anything.
And I was gonna say, like, it had nothing to do with what
no.
you did.
Okay. I even forgot that he and I were Facebook friends because I don't see any of his stuff. Like, we haven't talked in 25 years, Heather. Wow. And he messaged me and I was like, what? And it was just innocuous. And I told my coach and a couple of my friends, and they were floored. And I truly believe that once we tune in to, you know, call it what you want, your demons, your, you know, your traumas, your things that you need to work on, I think if you're truly ready, the universe will hand you invitations. And that's what it was. It was an invitation to face that and have a genuine conversation and remain unattached to his, I haven't had the conversation with him yet. It's coming. And I hope to God that he doesn't listen to this. I highly doubt it, but
he is a podcast listener.
He's a mom is in control podcast listener, but yeah. just really, I truly think that we are given invitations all the time. All the time. And it's up to us to take them or not.
Oh yeah. Isn't it beautiful how when we just work through our shit, like, why did this happen? It's happening for you. Like, you just look at it rather than, oh my gosh, this is awful. It's like, but what is it teaching you?
Yeah.
How is it showing up for you? I had that experience when I was working through my book proposal. And then all of a sudden these people started coming back and I'm like, interesting. Huh. Interesting. So how many times am I going to get punched in the gut through this process? How many times am I going to end up in fetal position on the floor? Like, it's healing on steroids. That's for sure.
It is for sure. Yes. Yes. Nice. And thank you for asking.
I love this stuff. Mm-hmm. Is it sick that I like this? It's like, go into the cave. I just think it's the acceleration process to find freedom.
I do too. No, I have a love-hate relationship with invitations like that, or just like talking about, you know, these massive aha moments that people have, or I get excited for growth opportunities. Sometimes it's like a, you know, throw up excited and like punch someone in the face excited, but it's nonetheless, mm-hmm. I guess that just means, you know, you're an evangelist for personal development.
Well, I think once you start, I mean, it's almost like the Matrix, right? You take that other pill and you head down that path. But once you start seeing progress, you're not suffering anymore. Or you're not like, you're not addicted to the suffering. You're like, oh, okay. I get it. Like, change is possible.
Yeah.
Once you get a little taste of it, you're like, more of this, please, more of this, please. But it definitely is a light and dark, right? I truly believe, I mean, I can feel immense joy and yet like deep grief at the same time.
1,000%. Yes. And I think even before you experience it, just knowing that it's possible, mm-hmm. that will kind of like, I call it like the tipping point, like that'll tip you over into that and just can gain momentum and have some, you know, crappy side roads as well. But no, I agree with that 100%.
So how's your book doing? How to Stop Feeling Like Shit? When did that come out?
It came out January 2nd, 2018, and it's currently been translated into 16 or more. I think I might have lost count. At least 16 languages.
That's amazing.
It's in like 19 or 20 countries, and that's another thing that I did the work on, releasing it. And I think that I did some unintended blocking with my first book and was just afraid of the spotlight, afraid of so many things. And with this book, I knew it was coming. And so I was like, what do I need to do to release her and just really let this project, this book, be as big as she needed to be? Mm-hmm. And I did some work around that. And lo and behold, the foreign deals just kept coming in and kept coming in. And so it astounded me, but then again, didn't surprise me. You know, because I'm like, okay, see what happens when you do the work. Mm-hmm. I was ready. And she wanted to go far and wide into as many countries and languages and cultures as possible.
I love that you say she.
Oh yeah.
Like, release, let go.
Yeah. I mean, it was art, you know, when you put your, and you know this, like when you put your heart and soul into a project like this, and maybe this isn't everybody's perspective, but I carry that is my art. My words are my art. And I truly, like, I personify that. And because there are some pieces of poetry that I've written that I don't remember writing. Like, there is something about it that is, I don't know if I'm channeling or what's going on, but it truly is its own energy.
How do you feel when you see people that you know and they're like, I just finished your book?
Well, first of all, if it's people like in my industry, I'm always like especially honored that people would sit down and read it. But
like an old high school friend.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
A little uncomfortable, I'm not going to lie, especially when it's people who, especially like other moms in my community, there's something about, like, I still do love the anonymity that I feel here. Like, mm-hmm. I am first and foremost Colton and Sydney's mom. Like, I'm not the life coach or the author or anything like that. And sometimes something shifts when people find that out about me. Mm-hmm. And it's not always positive. So I do still love the anonymity of being like everybody else. But it's still a bit uncomfortable for me. I'll be honest with you. It feels really amazing that people have taken the time to do that and that it meant something to them. But I still am working on like the dynamic, because my identity has changed in their eyes. So that's,
yeah, I'm working through that.
A little complicated. Yeah.
Yeah. I, especially locally, I'll be in public with my children and I'm like, hair's messy, no makeup, which I don't wear a lot of makeup all the time, but they're staring at me funny. Mm-hmm. Or I'll be like, oh, that, you know, I'm checking in. It's Heather Chauvin. They're like, Heather Chauvin. I'm like, oh God, don't do that. And I'm having a hard time with that. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I'm just a person. And mm-hmm. I see possibility in everyone. I'm like, what message is inside of you? But it's like, you're seen. You just got to deal with shit.
Yeah, it is. And true. Like, there's still a part of me, you know, my daughter's tutor came over and she was just kind of offhandedly mentioned like a dream that she had. And I latch onto that. Like, it's just, I can't help it. Like, don't tell a life coach what your dream is, because we are going to bombard you with, you know, 5 pounds, yeah, and then email you resources.
Oh, okay, good. I'm not the only one. I'm like, I have a conversation with someone and then after I'm like texting them articles and I'm like, oh God, stop, Heather.
Right.
Follow up. How is that big bold action that you took since last week, since I saw you? Oh fuck.
It's fun.
Okay. Andrea, mm-hmm. thank you. As always, it's a pleasure. Your podcast, Your Kick-Ass Life, that's where they can find you. On iTunes, everywhere.
iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, all the places.
Awesome. And if someone's like, man, I like this woman, I want to know more of her, how can I get closer to her? What do you have coming up?
I am just starting to send out really great emails, which I haven't done for a long time. It's always just been my podcast episode. So I'm excited about that. Just short emails that are powerful and empowering for women. So you can sign up at yourkickasslife.com.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you. As always, we could probably talk every day and it would be a different conversation. But as always, I like pulling back the curtains with you. So thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure. And thank you everyone for spending their time with us. I'm always honored about that.
Yay.
I sometimes joke that I wish I taught people how to make green smoothies for a living, but I know I'm doing that because I'm trying to run away from what brings me joy. And what brings me joy is helping women and men, families in general, and children feel alive. And sometimes that journey to feeling alive is painful. It's emotionally uncomfortable, and it's not always easy. This is why I created the Aligned Life Quiz. So if you're tired of being tired, you want to stop just surviving, and you want to find out exactly where to focus and access realistic tools to confidently manage your energy, emotions, and impact, you can head on over to Heather Chauvin, chauvin.com/lifequiz. It takes you 2 minutes and it's going to show you, I call them internal leadership skills. Where do you need to focus your energy and attention for the quickest results? And also, which phase are you living in? So head on over to heatherchauvin.com/lifequiz to take the Aligned Life Quiz right now. If you're ready to stop just surviving and you want to start thriving, but you don't know how to manage it all, go there. It will take you 2 minutes and it will change your life. I also on the inside show you which podcast episodes to listen to based on your quiz results. heatherchauvin.com/life, L-I-F-E, quiz.